We're going to talk about health IT. The Office of the National Coordinator for Health IT wants to make exchanging patient records as easy as email. The ONC says the interoperability of records is one of the four largest barriers hospitals and doctors face in using electronic health records. And Federal News Radio's Jason Miller, of course, right here, he joins us with how the ONC is helping to reduce the barriers in both the public and private sectors. ONC is the Office of the National Coordinator, right?
Exactly.
So the National Coordinator for Health IT, they want to make this exchanging patient records as easy as email. That I'm sure some folks out there are going, well, what does that mean?
Well, it's not email as you and I know right. it, but as easy as email. The idea, if you can do email, you can do this. Now, they're still working on the exact approach, and I think there's going to be multiple approaches. It's not going to be a one-size-fits-all. But we've heard, for instance, about the Nationwide Health Information Exchange, what they call the NIN. That's being used by, for instance, VA in the private sector to share veterans data on approved and you know, when there's a service level agreement and a memorandum of understanding, all right. those good things. They're also being used with the Social Security Administration and Virginia, the state of Virginia, for certain information about disability. Still, David Blumenthal, the national coordinator for health IT at HHS, calls making this exchange easier really the most important thing his office has to do. I caught up with him after his speech today at the Montgomery County, Maryland Chamber of Commerce event on health IT opportunities in Bethesda, Maryland.
Now is to make this exchange of health information easier and more widespread, because it is really hard to do. It's in some ways a lot harder than just learning to use the record itself. And the reason it's so hard to do is because it means that people have to work together across organizational boundaries, across geographic boundaries, across legal boundaries, and that is always hard, no matter where you are, no matter who you are. So that's going to be our focus over the next 6 to 8 months.
Is that where the NIN, the National Health Information Network, is going to come into play?
That's going to be one of the solutions that we're going to be refining for the nation's practitioners and consumers.
There's going to be others similar to that, or just the Regional Health Exchange? Is there going to be kind of a network of networks? Do you know, or is that still...
That's a very likely solution, but as I explained, we're also thinking about how email, direct email, can be useful, so that not everyone has to do exactly the same thing in order to be effective in exchange.
Now, he says interoperability is still one of those big barriers. Does my system talk to your system? And they're creating what he calls novel exchange processes that are similar to email to help overcome them. Again, we're not talking about email as you and I do it, but secure, you know, email using what they call public key infrastructure, right. hash, you know, all those security features.
So this isn't just sending your Gmail account.
Exactly.
This is very secure stuff because they understand that these are very important records.
Exactly. Yeah. But in a way that makes them interoperable no matter which system you're
right.
using. Now, he says for small hospitals and doctor's offices, there are 62 regional extension centers that already provide local support. So far, about 40,000 physicians in these regional centers have taken advantage of these of this support. And this includes training, support, guidance, even technical assistance to physicians who want to work with and bring in health IT into their practices. So they're setting up this idea of understanding, okay, what makes it interoperable and make sure you can get there.
And so, as we've been talking about, if you're talking about health records, it's almost impossible to talk about that without talking about security and privacy.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the biggest things, security and privacy, utmost concern. Blumenthal says that without those insurances, it's going to be difficult to get anybody on board, doctors, yeah. hospitals, and patients,
right.
most importantly.
Right.
There are a couple of things that the ONC is doing to help overcome this barrier. The first is around products that are certified to be interoperable. And let me be clear, they're not being certified to be secure or private, but the point is you got to have an approved products list to start with, know that these products at least interact with each other, and then the security is a little bit easier.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are already 250 products on this approved products list in just six months. So people are starting to use it. Vendors are really excited about it. Blumen says also overcoming the security barrier is part of the workforce challenge.
Now, to support all this technical assistance, we need people. And the health IT sector is short of trained professionals. So we've created a nationwide health information technology training program. 84 community colleges are receiving support right now to train health IT professionals. These are good jobs with a future because the health sector is expanding, whether we like it or not. It's expanding every day, and this technology is going to be critical to its future. This year, we're going to graduate 3,400 health IT professionals. Now, this program began in September, and we hope annually thereafter to graduate 10,000 a year until we reach a total of 40,000. We estimate that the national shortage of health IT professionals is about 50,000.
Now, this is also why the National Institute of Standards and Technology from the Commerce Department is also involved, as are several health IT committees that include vendors and other experts. This is something that they've been doing and want to do as a group, as a community. It's not something the government is dictating or sending down edicts. And I think that this is why you're seeing some progress now. They're also why you're seeing people are starting to use it. For instance, the 250 products in the last 6 months that have been approved is an example that, okay, we get it, we understand it, we agree with you.
But it's interesting. We hear about shortages in cybersecurity personnel. We don't hear as much about shortages of health IT professionals.
And I think part of the reason why is there's two reasons for that. One reason is health IT professionals work in hospitals and doctor's offices or with companies versus cybersecurity is in the government. The government needs health cybersecurity people, or the vendors need them. So I think that's why you get a little more focus on them.
So Dr. Blumenthal, did he give you any sense about how much progress is actually being made around health IT? We've been talking about it a long time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's been a lot of progress. Remember, health IT got a kickstart under President Bush, speaking of that, 2004, if you remember, when he called for everyone to have an electronic health record by 2009.
Yeah.
No, obviously that didn't happen, but that push by the White House, along with then the $19 billion in the Recovery Act, really has given some legs to this effort. Blumenthal says that the portion of doctors and hospitals who say they're using e-health records grew by 10% alone between 2009 and 2010, and he expects that number only to increase in the coming years, especially around the idea of meaningful use incentive program.
The incentive program began taking registrants on January 3rd. We now have over 13,000 hospitals and physicians registered with the intent of collecting meaningful use payments. For the Medicaid program, you can receive payments already, and in fact, several hospitals and physician practices have already received several millions of dollars in Medicare and Medicaid incentives. Starting May 1st, if you serve Medicare patients and register as a Medicare meaningful user of electronic health records, you'll be able to get the down payments, the beginning payments, on the suite of payments that are available over the next 5 to 10 years. And you qualify as a meaningful user on May 1st of this year, you will get a check for $18,000. We expect the first of those checks to make a splash. We know that from our surveys that 80% of U.S. hospitals intend to become meaningful users of electronic health records. And 40% of the nation's physicians, when surveyed this past summer, said that they were intending to do that.
Now, Blumenthal says all this points to progress that's going to continue to increase over the next 3 to 5 years. Interestingly, remember, David Blumenthal is a doctor. He understands it. He told a wonderful story about how when he was a doctor and health records started to kind of pop up, and he said, well, I'm not sure about them. But he said, listen, doctors use iPhones, they use iPads, they use other technologies in their everyday lives. There's no reason why they should go back to the 1950s when it comes to their patients and their everyday work. If you use it in your everyday lives, there's no reason to use it in work as well. And it's going to make everything better and more safe and just more, it's a better service to the patients.
And we were talking about information sharing earlier, but this is part of the information sharing. You have to do it smartly. You have to do it wisely. You have to do it securely because this is important information that people don't want out and share with everyone. But it's also very important to do.
Right. You can't use it as an excuse. Either, well, it's insecure, or I don't like it, or I'm scared of it.
Because there are a lot of gains. There are a lot of, being able to tell which drugs conflict with
exactly.
one another. There are so, health IT can do that much more efficiently than any one person can do.
And health IT doesn't, and electronic records don't have bad handwriting.
Yeah. You're going to have much more tomorrow with Tom Temin and Amy Morris on the Federal Drive.
As well, federalnewsradio.com.
And of course, online all the time, federalnewsradio.com, Federal News Radio's, Jason Miller. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Coming up, we are going to hear from Congressman Van Hollen. He actually made comments. Well, you got to talk to him, right?
I did. I caught up with him. He spoke at this event that I was at today, and I did a walk and talk on the way out. You'll hear the wind.
And so, we'll hear the bluster in the background, but some important insights about, all this anti-federal employee provisions that are being, what does he think about that? Well, you're going to hear from him just ahead on the Dora Beck Insider. It's on Federal News. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Video teleconferencing solutions are changing the way people communicate by breaking down walls and enabling face-to-face communication regardless of distance or environment. Tanberg, now a part of Cisco, the leading global provider of telepresence, high-definition video conferencing, and mobile video products and services, developed Break Down the Walls to provide a window into the ways government, education, and healthcare organizations are using VTC solutions to help them operate more effectively and efficiently, and the ways video solutions can be used to address the ongoing challenges facing these public sector organizations today. Video breaks down the walls of communication between classrooms, boardrooms, war rooms, and operating rooms, and enables the new way of working. High definition, real time, secure face-to-face conversations, as if you're in the same room. Learn more at breakdownthewalls.com. That's breakdownthewalls.com.
I wasn't born to go with the flow. I was born to make a difference, to make waves. I want my sweat and hard work to mean something. I was born to serve in the United States Coast Guard. If you were born ready to lead, to protect, to uphold the law, then visit GoCoastGuard.com. The United States Coast Guard. Born ready.
Sponsored by the United States Coast Guard. In cooperation with the Maryland, D.C., Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
By providing access to the care they need and the quality they deserve, Medicaid health plans enhance health outcomes of our nation's underserved. Just listen to how a Medicaid health plan made a difference to Miriam.
I was 10 years overdue for my annual mammogram when my Medicaid plan case manager called and convinced me to just do it. The mobile mammography van my plan provided made it simple. Breast cancer runs in my family. That phone call may have saved my life.
Medicaid Health Plans of America, ensuring access to better health care. Learn more at MHPA.org.
If I could have a heart to heart with my dad.
If I could have a heart to heart with my mom.
I'd probably talk about girls.
We'd probably talk about girls.
Anything, boys, school, clothes.
You'd be amazed at what they'll talk about if you give them the chance.
If I had a heart to heart with my dad.
If it were real heart to heart, I'd tell my parents what I'm going through.
I'd probably talk to him about growing up.
I'd probably tell my dad that I wish we'd do more stuff together.
I don't think it has to be a heart to heart. I just want to talk.
Give your family everything. Give them your time. From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Human Capital Management for Defense is a highly anticipated training conference with more than 300 delegates and key speakers from Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, CPMS, OPM, the Joint Staff, UCOM, NORTHCOM, STRATCOM, DISA, DLA, and OSD. Don't miss this year's event to be held on February 14th through the 17th at the Sheraton National Hotel in Arlington, Virginia. Visit the website hcmdusa.com for more information and to register. Mention code FNR for a $200 discount.
Welcome back to the Dora Beck Insider on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 25 past the hour. Just want to let you know it's not directly federal related, but of course Steve Jobs stepped down at Apple, took a leave of absence at Apple earlier this week. Now Google is saying that its co-founder Larry Page will replace Eric Schmidt as the chief executive. Really a surprise move at the internet giant, search giant. Larry Page will take charge of day-to-day operations and CEO starting April 4th. Mr. Schmidt will become the executive chairman of the company, focusing externally on partnerships and government outreach. Well, who knows if there'll be an implication for you. Google, of course, making a big push into this market, but we'll continue to follow it. 26 past the hour, employee unions concerned about lawmakers slipping anti-federal worker provisions into a year-long continuing resolution. Well, they're not alone. Congressman Chris Van Hollen is the ranking member of the Budget Committee. He represents the 8th District of Maryland, and he tells Federal News Radio's Jason Miller why he's concerned, too, and what he's doing about it.
I am concerned with that, and we all need to be very vigilant as this process moves forward and be willing to blow the whistle on efforts that would have very significant negative impacts, not just on federal employees, but of course on all the people throughout the country who depend on the services they provide, whether they're people who are sending out Social Security checks, whether they're people who are involved in protecting our country, whether it be the FBI, the folks at Homeland Security, whether it's students who who are getting, you know, student loans from the federal government. So we need to be very vigilant in that area. It's easy to talk about federal government in impersonal terms as if it's this giant bureaucracy that's not productive. The reality is, while you can, of course, find efficiency savings in the federal government, just like you can in other places, there comes a point very quickly where you are going to be hurting the American public with respect to the services they're getting. In NIH, you're doing a lot of research on cures and treatments for diseases. At FDA, they work to make sure that they protect the medicines that we consume in the sense that making sure that they're safe and do what they say they're going to do. So it has huge consequences if you take draconian cuts.
Are you trying to explain that to your fellow colleagues saying, listen, it's easy to pick on the government, but when it comes down to it, if we start really affecting employees, this affects not just you and me or the employees, but the society as a whole?
Yes, we are. Look, federal employees are willing to do their part in terms of addressing our national challenges, including the deficit, but they shouldn't be asked to shoulder this burden alone. And people need to very quickly recognize that when you start taking draconian cuts in the federal government, you are directly impacting the lives of the American people in a significant and negative way.
Do you think your colleagues understand that, or is that something that it's a slow process to get them to understand?
Well, I know many of my colleagues understand it, but for others, it's going to require a major effort to, you know, present them with the facts so that they can understand the situation.
That, of course, the wind. Jason Miller mentioned that it was a he was talking to him as they were walking. So that's Congressman Van Hollen, Chris Van Hollen. He is the ranking member of the Budget Committee. He represents the 8th District in Maryland, and he's told our Federal News Radio's Jason Miller about how he's educating congressional colleagues about the benefits of that federal employees bring to the country.